I have
current geek.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Current Geek. Oh, the weekly proceedings. Just kidding, I didn't read it right. The talk show about items of interest to the geeks of the world and you. Dink, dink. I'm Scott Johnson and he's Tom Merritt.
I think I was like, wow, where did we go? I got fascinated and I forgot.
That's all right.
I will gavel you in. I apologize.
I'm still working on a little laryngitis from all the yelling we did over the weekend. For some reason.
Yeah, there was quite a lot of raised voices, mm-hmm. but not in anger.
No.
In fun.
In fun and love and in respect and all the things that normally are not associated with yelling. But we had a great time in Las Vegas, and it was nice to have a few current geekers walk up and go, oh, I love Current Geek. I had that happen a few times, and it was nice. But
That's very sweet.
Yeah, it is very sweet.
I love chatting with people. Lots of people came up and said, hey. It was very good. Very fun.
Yeah, it was a great time. I would do it again. Would go again, or however the phrase goes. But thanks, everybody, for...
5 stars, would go again.
Yeah. And actually, it's funny because this is the last show I recorded before I left. And I can't believe I'm already here again doing this. Like, tomorrow would be my day of getting out of here. So
tomorrow you celebrate your 1 week anniversary of leaving for Las Vegas.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of am, I guess. But anyway, we're glad to be back. And we got a regular old fashioned episode of the Current Geek Show right here.
Handcrafted by artisan podcasters.
Mm-hmm. Open range.
Working in the traditions of the podcasters of yore.
Yeah. Gluten-free, but you have to ask for it. There is soy.
Let us know if you have any allergies.
Yeah, there is soy and maybe a little peanut oil. But other than that, I think most of us are going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who have a problem, we are working on alternatives.
It's a single batch episode, by the way.
Oh, great. Oh, why didn't that? Oh, it was perfect timing, too, for this transition.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom, what is happening in the latest breaking news of the day?
Well, I don't know, but I do have this. A parrot in Brazil was taught to alert drug dealers to police operations in the neighborhood.
Okay.
The bird would say, "Mom, the police," when officers were nearby. This last time, the warning apparently was not good enough, and people were arrested, and the bird seized as evidence. But it's worth noting, the bird said nothing to the cops.
Wow.
And has now been transferred to a zoo where it's being taught to fly.
It already knows how to talk. No need for that. Teach him how to fly.
It knows how to say, "Mom, the police."
I always wanted do you ever want a parrot growing up? Because I always wanted one. I thought it'd be cool.
I always wanted to teach a parrot things.
Yeah.
But I didn't want the responsibility of caring for the parrot.
Oh, I see. You just wanted the thing that would repeat stuff back to you, and then your podcasting career was born.
Yeah. I think in my head, my ideal parrot situation would have been my sister had a parrot that I could then go in and program to say things.
Oh,
possibly to her.
She would feed it, water it, change it, clean it. You would just be in charge of
of getting it to say rude things.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing, though. If I had a parrot and I was 12, I would teach it to say rude things. But I get the feeling that you would probably also teach it, I don't know, famous quotes by notable authors or something.
Yeah, I probably would have taught it, "My God, it's full of stars."
Yes.
Or something.
Yes, yeah. You would have gone like deep sci-fi and like hard fantasy or something.
May the force be with you always.
May the force
be with you always. May the force be with you always.
And then everyone wants to kill the parrot. That's fantastic.
Yeah, probably a good thing I never had a parrot.
I remember my mom saying, "We'll never have a parrot," and we all said, "Why?" And she said, "Because those things listen to everything everyone's saying, and they'll repeat them." And I said,
"Same
well,
reason she doesn't have an Amazon Echo."
Exactly. And it's like the modern day equivalent is she doesn't want an Echo. She doesn't want...
Did you tell her mom parrots aren't cloud connected?
No. No, but they keep all their data, no port to hack it out. So they were actually a lot safer than your Echo, it turns out. Back in the day.
Suppose so.
Yeah.
I also used to be called Merritt the Parrot.
Oh.
In the, you know, clever nicknaming of the fourth grader.
Hmm. It's not too bad. I was Scotty Potty.
Merritt the Carrot. Carrot actually stuck more than Parrot, but I got Merritt the Parrot.
Why Carrot? Because you were getting tall and lanky?
No, because it rhymed with merit.
Oh.
Both of them were simply because they rhymed with merit.
Okay. Because mine was Scotty Potty, which rhymed with Scotty. And I went by Scotty for a lot of years. And then I had, they shortened it to Scott the Pot. That happened. And
but not because of you were known for your pot making or smoking or anything, right?
No, I wasn't yet at that point in my life. I wasn't yet into the
hardcore drugs,
the hardcore accumulation and distribution of drugs. I wasn't there yet, but I would be later. And then it all went away, which is fantastic.
Yeah, it's weird how that happens. Mm. anyway, parrot didn't help warn the police or warn the criminals against the police, and now the parrot is learning to fly, which it never could before in its old job.
Well, I believe he can
good
fly.
For the parrot.
I can.
Parrot speaks Portuguese, by the way. When I say mum the police, translate that to Portuguese, and that's what the parrot actually
says. I was gonna say English isn't gonna help it much in this scenario, so I'm glad to hear.
These were Brazilian criminals, so they spoke Portuguese, as did the parrot. Nice. I think the parrot's better off, honestly.
Yeah.
You know, parrot did its job, kept its mouth shut.
Yeah.
But now it's actually going to, you know, have a better life.
It didn't squeal, or squawk is the better term probably here.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't rat. No, rat doesn't work. But do you think do you think other parrots are taking his example and deciding how to behave and change
their
ways? Yeah,
I think so. I would point to this parrot and say, you know, nobody likes a snitch.
No squawking, Larry, or whatever your name was.
Larrett
the parrot. Merritt the parrot. Nailed it.
Yeah.
Got it.
So a manuscript in author Anthony Burgess's archives appears to be a follow-up book to A Clockwork Orange, but it's not a sequel. Mm. Sorry to tell you. Mm. The 200-page work is titled The Clockwork Condition and contains thoughts on the human condition and the moral panic that happened in reaction to the release of the film adaptation of A Clockwork Orange by Stanley Kubrick. Mm. He did come out with a sort of musings and essays on A Clockwork Orange later, but I guess he didn't want to publish this because he's, in his own words, he said in an interview once, "I realized I'm not a philosopher."
Mm. I've always had this stance that if Kubrick had not directed that movie based on that work, that it would have been remade by now. I think that people look at Kubrick and they look at his films and they're very hesitant to try to work in that space. They don't want to try to redo it. Now, 2001, A Space Odyssey did get a pretty silly, over-the-top sequel that was not at all Kubrickian in its nature. So once in a while, something like that will change. But actual remakes, like saying, hey, what's some old movie we should redo now? His movies are kind of untouchable, which bums me out because I actually think A Clockwork Orange would be an interesting take today in the eyes and the hands of a director with a more modern spin on that sort of thing. And some might say, well, Scott, we don't need it. All his movies are masterpieces. We don't have to mess with that stuff. But I would like to see A Clockwork Orange do more. So in response to this, the follow-up book, I would read this because I thought the movie was fascinating and strange and informed a lot of my childhood and also freaked me out pretty bad. But I would read this. Is this a thing I'm going to be able to get my hands?
It informed your childhood. How old were you when you saw this?
Far too young. I saw it when I was like 8 at a friend's house and it freaked me out, man. Like that wasn't for me. That was supposed to be for adults. And when I saw that, this is like one of your friends that like their parents didn't care what they had on the VCR.
I was okay.
So you could go over there and go, oh, what do you got here? Freaking, I don't know, some VHS thing that was just super contraband to my parents, like RoboCop or something that you just can't watch. But I'm like, oh, I'm going over to his house to watch him. Jimmy's house was his name. And when I went to Jimmy Jensen's house, they had A Clockwork Orange in once. And I remember being just fascinated by what this thing was. I just couldn't understand it. This like anarchistic vision of near future
Uncle
crazy.
Got milk.
But like, and what really stuck with me was the toothpicks on the eyes. Not toothpicks. They were,
of course.
Whatever. They were holding his eyes open. Yeah. Which is still just an insane visual. And so at this stage now, where I'm less freaked out about such things, and I'm actually interested in the narrative, I would like to see I don't know, more of it. But that doesn't have anything to do with this book. I mean, is this a thing you would go run out and get and put on your Kindle or get an audiobook for, this sort of follow-up 200-page thing?
I'm curious. He produced a short autobiographical novel tackling some of these same themes called The Clockwork Testament in 1974. And maybe it's just me getting old, but part of me is willing to think, well, if Burgess believed that The Clockwork Testament was a better work, maybe The Clockwork Condition isn't that great.
Oh.
Like, I don't know. Maybe it's not worth my time. If Burgess himself gave it up and said, hey, I'm a novelist, not a philosopher, how about I just write a novel? And he wrote The Clockwork Testament to be that novel, then I'm guessing that The Clockwork Testament is the better read. And I haven't read that. If I had read The Clockwork Testament and A Clockwork Orange, and I was the kind of person, especially I could see myself doing this back in my 20s, who was like, I want to eat everything up about this, clockwork everything. Mm-hmm. I'd probably be way into reading this just to see the historical trend, right? Mm-hmm. Like, where was his mind here and how does it differ from Testament? And what did he think of the reaction to the movie? And does he mention Jimmy Johnson or whatever his name is?
Jensen.
You're Johnson.
Jimmy Johnson is a former NFL coach.
I'm sort of mildly curious, but I don't know that I'll ever read this. Yeah. Honestly. I am fascinated by the idea that a 200-page work from a great author like Burgess could just be sitting around in his manuscript waiting to be discovered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's an interesting dude. I remember hearing that he was one of the writers or wrote it. Maybe he was the main writer. I don't remember. But when that TV miniseries in the 70s came out about Jesus, I think it was Jesus of Nazareth it was called. My parents were all excited about it. He co-wrote that thing, or wrote it.
Oh, yeah.
And wrote the screenplay for it. And I remember thinking at the time, somehow I knew that this was that guy.
He was, yeah, because it made such an impression. You probably remembered a lot of things about it.
Yeah, and I remember saying, I think I remember even trying to say to my parents, well, it's okay if it's a Jesus thing, but the same guy wrote Clockwork Orange, and you guys, I have a memory of this. I don't know why.
Such a kid thing to do, right?
It totally is, because I'm totally conflating as...
Oh, you always want me to eat oranges, but I can't watch a Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, that exactly. That's more the logic that a kid has. And I feel like I had that logic multiple times growing up. But anyway.
Oh, yeah, I think we all did.
If you're a Clockwork lore fan, I guess now you have 200 more pages to satisfy your appetite.
I think it's хорошо.
Yeah.
Nickelodeon has greenlit a Star Trek animated series from the Emmy-winning writers Kevin and Dan Hageman. If you've ever seen Trollhunters or Lego Ninjago, then you know about the Hagemans. It follows a group of lawless teens who discover a derelict Starfleet ship and then use it to search for adventure, meaning, and salvation.
It's CGI, right? CGI animated, so it's not a 2D effort, as far as I know. Yeah, it says right here. I think that's fine. So it's something in the vein of, like, you know, Clone Wars or something similar.
Yeah, right.
To that, I am actually excited about this because I feel like, well, first of all, Trollhunters is awesome. It's one of the best things you can watch in a modern animated form as a serial type TV show. It's very, very good. And it's, you know, while it has sort of the mastermind of Guillermo del Toro as its, you know, creator and producer, these guys are no slouches. Their stuff's really good. And I think that this could be great. And also I like that it's outside of, CBS All Access, you know, give me something.
Well,
that
it's CBS produced. Right. It's actually from Kurtzman's production company. So it's part of the Alex Kurtzman Star Trek Empire.
Sure.
It's just not showing on All Access. It's showing on Nickelodeon.
Yeah. I just think that's a good idea to get Trek fans wherever they may be and get some new ones too.
If I may be a troll, since we were just talking about Trollhunters.
Go for it.
For a moment. It does tempt me to want to stamp my feet and get all upset because everybody says, well, wait, why is Star Trek Discovery on All Access? I don't want to have to pay for access to it. That's baloney. I hate that. Mm. But putting Star Trek animated on Nickelodeon is actually harder to get if you're a cord cutter, because Nickelodeon is not available on most cord cutting services because Viacom is very stingy with putting its channels on cord cutting services. So, and There is no Viacom. I can just pay for Viacom like there is CBS All Access. So I would have to get cable to watch this.
Right.
Or possibly maybe Philo. I may be remembering it wrong, but there's like one other service that I would have to get that's not just Nickelodeon. It's a bunch of other things that I already get. So to me, the CBS All Access model is the wave of the future. Like, I pay for the thing or I don't pay for the thing. It's easy to decide. I have control whether I get it or not. And it's just the CBS thing. Right. Whereas Nickelodeon, it's like, well, how do I get it? There's no source material. I have to find some tricky way to get it.
Yeah, this is a good point. I mean, I think on the one hand, you could argue, since the majority of people are still using some form of cable, that this is, since Nickelodeon's part of most basic packages, this is a nice little toss to them to say, hey, here's a thing on what we traditionally think of as the thing that's hooked up to everyone's house and not part of the streaming universe that everybody seems to be going to or is going to in some fashion.
If you're stuck in the past, here's a perk for you.
Yeah, kind of like that. If you're not, if you're just somebody who wants the thing but would prefer it, I mean, you know, you're right. I guess I don't have an argument against this. I think you make a really good point.
I guess the answer is I could probably, and we'll wait and see, maybe they won't do this, and then I'll be righteously angry, but I could probably just buy it from iTunes or Google Play or something and, you know, watch it a day later.
Yeah, Amazon will have it probably next day, that sort of thing. Yeah, I don't know. I just hope, I mean, what I'm hoping for here is, forgetting about distribution for a minute, the actual content of the thing. I'm a big fan of all things Star Trek, even the old crappy animated series. I love it for its cheese and its cheapness and its...
Well, they used scripts that were meant for the original series that, you know, wasn't around anymore. So they're good stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of them are actually really good. Some of them are terrible, but usually it's a combination of like... Yeah. A little bit of bad story, but maybe...
Man, there's also Spock's brain in the original series.
That's so bad. The worst piece of Star Trek material ever made is Spock's brain, so I'm with you. But you know, like bring a new generation a chance to see Star Trek in a different light and make it part of their zeitgeist instead of just what their uncles and parents and grandparents like. You know, like that's a good thing. So I'm excited about this. And this is... So my understanding is there's two animated things happening. One is happening on All Access.
On All Access, right.
And that's then what I've heard. Yeah, and then there's this one. So I guess take your pick or get it all or whatever.
We're going to hit peak Star Trek real soon, folks.
Yeah. I don't know if that's bad or good. I can't tell yet. I don't know how I feel.
I think it's probably bad, but I don't think it's bad forever. Yeah. I think we'll find a couple of things that were like, ooh, that wasn't a good idea. Mm. And I'm not saying which ones those will be.
Right.
And then it'll narrow back down to... good stuff.
You know, I was thinking the other day that Picard project could turn out to be amazing, like everyone hopes it will be, because it's Captain freaking Picard.
Right.
But we may all be surprised and end up doing that Giorgio show instead because it's cooler or something.
Well, you know? I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, if I had to bet, I'd say anything Patrick Stewart will agree to be involved in is probably going to be good, but you never know. Mm-hmm. He may think it's good and it just doesn't land. The Giorgio thing feels a little unnecessary, but that could be amazing, right? That could end up being like this great genre take on Star Trek, which we've never really seen.
Yeah.
The closest thing was Deep Space Nine was kind of a departure from the normal, like captain on the ship sort of situation. So, yeah.
At one point we had, let's see, when was peak Star Trek in the past? Probably when
Next Generation to Deep Space Nine to Voyager, right? We always had two Star Treks on the air and movies were hitting the theaters.
That's like, a good point.
In the 90s.
Yep. You had 98's First Contact came out in theaters while DS9 was in its run when Worf was on it and Voyager running concurrently.
So yeah, that's peak Star Trek.
That's got to be peak Star Trek. So this is a lot more Star Trek, a lot more at the same time. But, you know, Sidian asked the question in the chat, is it attracting new viewers? I don't know. Like Discovery. I don't know. How do we know? We don't know. I think it's doing well enough. They're
CBS All Access, if you believe CBS, is hitting and beating all of their goals for streaming and revenue.
Right.
So apparently it's doing what they want it to do.
Yeah. And that show has a budget and a half, man. And they keep making them. So season three coming. I think that I think it's going okay. I mean, there is this, it's easy to get trapped in this feeling of like, well, it's such a limited scope. It's just that app and it's the only way you can get it. And I think that,
yeah, I when people say that, I'm like, yeah, I feel the same thing about Stranger Things. It's limited scope. It's just in that app from Netflix.
Exactly. Nobody says that. Exactly. You're totally right. A little perspective, people.
I mean, granted, we can have a debate about whether, you know, CBS All Access's other offerings make it worth it if you want more than just Discovery, and Netflix is probably easily do. But I know people who are like, I can't find anything to watch on Netflix anymore. I'm canceling. But that doesn't mean you should be angry at Netflix for existing, right?
No, like, no.
I don't know.
I think it's fine.
So weird.
Yeah. Enjoy your Star Trek, you guys. We may not get this much again in a long time, so just enjoy it.
Hopefully it's all good.
Yep.
Speaking of Spock's brain, researchers have restored cellular activity to brain material removed from pigs. Now, granted, I and the entire hosts of This Week in Science all want this to lead to Futurama-style heads in jars someday, but it's just the beginning. It's just brain material. It's not whole brains, and it's not thinking brains. Nerve signals that could have resulted in consciousness were actually blocked on purpose. Mm-hmm. And no coordinated electrical signaling was observed. However, what they did observe is significant. Blood vessels functioned with a blood substitute that the researchers call BrainX.
Oh, jeez. That's a great name.
BrainX brings back the brain. So the BrainX substitute is what they were testing here and had actually restored some function. They observed metabolic activity. They saw drug response. And all of this, here's the super important thing. I may have buried the lead here. All of this after the brains have been deprived of blood at room temperature for 4 hours.
Wow. That's impressive. And
I mean, we
freaky.
Call someone brain dead after less, you know, a very short amount of time. I don't want to say what it is because I'll get it wrong. But, it, you know, once you see that flat line, you assume like, well, that's it. You can't bring them back.
Yeah.
4 hours at room temperature with no blood. And then BrainX was able to restore some metabolic activity and some firing, some drug response.
Says here, and I'm just looking real quick to see if there's a definition.
Adhesive Wombat is not wrong when they write, this is how the zombie apocalypse begins.
Yeah, literally.
Could go either way. Yeah. I'm with you.
Yeah. When you first said they extracted pig brain material.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask, was that before they shipped it off for hot dogs at Wiener Schnitzel or after they did?
No, it been at room temperature for 4 hours, so Wiener Schnitzel would have rejected it.
Oh, well, they have low standards, so that's impressive. I can't find...
Even Wiener Schnitzel wouldn't use this in their hot dog.
I can't find the answer to my query, which is, what is generally the time between... brain, you know, when you say
it's
brain
minutes.
Dead, is
it? I didn't want to put a number on it because I know if I say it's 1 minute, somebody will say, well, it's actually 3 minutes, but it's minutes.
Like it's definitely it's not very, hours, right? Not hours for sure.
No, yeah. No. That the point is, you don't even have to know the answer to that question because 4 hours is well, 240 times probably past the amount of time we normally assume we could restore brain function.
Yeah.
I mean, you can restore the heart. After, you know, if you go flatline on the heart, you can try to keep, you know, you can do CPR and keep the blood moving to keep the brain alive. But once you lose brain function, that means brain death.
Yeah.
And it's quick.
Yeah. It's gotta be. Yeah. This is pretty impressive. Also BrainX is the most B movie ass thing I've ever heard in my life. My gosh. It's hilarious.
BrainX.
Don't forget your BrainX,
Belly. Keeps
the
brain flowing.
That was really hilarious. All right, I need some Phil Lord and Chris Miller news. It's been a while.
Well, I've got some for you. Phil Lord and Chris Miller have signed a 5-year deal with Sony Pictures Television to develop live action and animated comedy and dramas. Remember, their previous deal was with Fox Television, which just got acquired by Disney, who owns Lucasfilm, who recently fired Lord Miller from a movie called Solo. So no big surprise that they're signing a deal with somebody else. But the best part of this is the deal includes multiple shows set in the Spider-Verse.
Ooh. Remember, at least Phil Lord, maybe Chris Miller, maybe both. I can't remember. Were they both involved in Spider-Verse? I think they were. Okay. Those guys are amazing. Your Lego movies and then that and, you know, I don't know. Solo may have been better if they hung around. Who knows? Or not. I don't know. I'm not making a judgment there. I kind of like Solo just fine the way it is. But anyway, that's very exciting. Super jazzed to hear about that. Because Spider-Verse deserves some offshoot, some spinoff. spin. I was trying to make
some web spinning.
You went right where I was aiming, but I couldn't quite land it.
I think, according to this Deadline article anyway, one of the reasons Lord and Miller signed the deal with Sony was they're like, could we do Spider-Verse? Hmm. We could do Spider-Verse stuff, right? Could we do Spider-Verse? Great. Yeah. Then we'll sign. Whatever. We'll do some other things too. And they still have some TV shows under production with Fox that will still come out. They still are non-exclusive, so they can do other movies. They can even do other TV shows. This is just a deal that commits them to doing a certain amount of shows for Sony Pictures Television and gives them the ability to access that Spider-Verse stuff that Sony has the rights to.
Yeah. Well, I've said this, and we're not doing any spoilers today, folks, but I will say this. I came away from Endgame deciding in my own head that if you take Infinity War and Endgame as a whole, that's my favorite Marvel. Forget about MCU, but just my favorite Marvel movie. It happens to be 6 hours long at that point, but it's my favorite hunk of Marvel cinema.
Mm-hmm.
But my favorite standalone, where I don't have to sandwich two movies together, is mm-hmm. Spider-Verse. I loved Spider-Verse so much. I want to have Spider-Verse's baby. I loved it so much.
You're a sunflower.
I loved it. Like, I just absolutely loved it. And so this is great news. And, you know, talking about Star Trek on TV, I'm all about cool Spider-Man on TV or connected universe Spider-Man stuff on TV. That would be amazeballs. So let's make it happen.
Yeah. I wonder if you ever get, what's his face? Tom
Holland?
Holland. Thank you. All I could think of was Tom Hiddle. And I was like, that's not right. I'm thinking of Hiddleston. Tom Holland to do a little, you know, appearance mm-hmm. at some point, do a voice or something.
I'd be into
if
it.
If it's animated. Yeah.
I mean, that kid, I say kid, he's in his 20s, but still a kid to me. He is so good. He is the Peter Parker none of us deserve. He's so good.
Yeah. He's too good.
So
he must be stopped.
He's this, and like all these years.
I love him 3,000.
Oh, jeez. That will mean nothing, I guess, to people unless they've gone. So you're okay. Anyway, he is just so good. And not only is he just perfectly cast as Peter Parker compared to all Peter Parkers, he's a good actor. Like, he can really sell it. And man, anyway, go see Endgame. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
What a great movie.
It is. You know what we watched last night? Mm. Iron Man.
From 2008's Iron Man, yeah?
Yeah, 2008 Iron Man, distributed by Paramount.
Fantastic.
Which reminded me when I saw that Paramount logo at the beginning, and it was like, Marvel Studios and Paramount Pictures present Iron Man. I was like, that's right. I forgot Disney didn't get Marvel Studios until after Hulk, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wait, right? So 2008, same year.
2008 was Iron Man. I think 2009 is when Disney got a hold of.
I thought Hulk was 08 as well. I could be wrong. The second Hulk, I mean.
But yeah. I think Disney didn't get Marvel until after both of those movies were out. So I think it was the next year.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right. And Hulk was 2008. So those two movies hit that same year. That feels like yesterday. That's so weird to me.
And watching it, I was like, man, this was a much bigger gamble.
Oh, back when they decided to do this,
you know, Marvel was like, I guess we start a movie studio with mm-hmm. Feig and this other guy. And then the guy left, mm-hmm. I think after Iron Man, before Hulk, the other producer just took off. It was like, yeah, peace out. Good luck, Feige. Mm. And then, you know, thankfully for Marvel, Disney acquired them and gave them, you know, the runway they needed. I think they might have been able to take off and do this, but would Paramount have treated them as well? I know it was just a distribution deal. It wasn't a notes giving situation, but I've felt so much more precarious when I realized that, like, oh my gosh, this universe didn't even start where it is right now.
Yeah. It's impressive. And what an enterprise now, like, well done. Like, I can't think of a more successful freaking combination of stuff that made a thing work. Like, Marvel is always not that it's always just been kryptonite, but it's always been, I didn't mean to make a DC reference, but it's always been a little bit, you know, rough. Things haven't worked out in the past. They've almost gone bankrupt multiple times. They've had to sell off pieces of themselves to just stay afloat. And then in 10 years, you just turned it into the biggest franchise filmmaking thing of all time, I think. Like,
I mean, say what you will about Disney. They are not perfect in many, many ways. They are less than perfect, but They are good caretakers.
They have done well with that.
Most things.
So far, yeah. And you could say phase one, which is what we're ending with the next Spider-Man thing.
Phase three.
One.
Yeah.
If we're ending,
although the Russo brothers have been saying a lot of, and maybe Feige too, of like, this really is these three phases is a big dividing point.
Yeah, this is a big change. And you know, there's a lot on the line in terms of sticking the landing for whatever's next, but it's impossible to not look back at those 10 years and just be kind of blown away. Like, yeah. It's really amazing what they pulled off, and it's
and
awesome.
And being able to negotiate with Sony to be like, let's bring Spider-Man into the MCU. Yeah. Come on, y'all.
To the point, it's so successful to the point that chatroom's having a bit of a micro argument about this.
Yeah,
I see that. Star Wars has been, it's been fine. It hasn't been Marvel fine, but it's fine. And you would never have thought you'd be saying that about B-tier Marvel characters like Iron Man and Thor. Like, that was unspeakable.
Well, and the other thing, I mean, Iron Man is a great movie. I loved it then. I loved it last night.
Yeah.
But thinking about Hulk and the original Thor, especially Hulk, those movies were shakier. They were not slam dunks by any stretch.
No.
Thor, I enjoyed a lot, but I didn't enjoy it as much as Iron Man 2. I feel like was real shaky.
Yeah. I didn't enjoy Thor until Ragnarok, honestly. I mean, it was
Iron Man 2 has higher points, but also to me, it also has some lower points.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a little shakier. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it took Marvel a while to shake out the jitters, and they were starting without the legacy that Star Wars is. So I think Star Wars is a higher difficulty level.
Yeah. I also think Avengers had the potential of being a messy, kludgy thing you would only do once or twice. And I think they smartly leaned into it and said,
yeah,
at the end of all of this, this will be about the team and not about the individuals.
And some of the stuff I've read Feige say is, you know, he learned as he went along, like, don't rush things. Mm-hmm. Give people the time they need, you know, give them deadlines, but give them the time they need to make a thing. And you can always adjust as you go along. And it's just an amazing balancing act.
It really is. It's something else. I feel like there'll be cool books in the future about how this all worked out. But look, what I just want to compliment each other real quick here on how we zero spoiled anything for anyone on anything to do with Endgame. Nothing. Except that thing Tom said, which you will only know if you see the movie.
Well, and only know if Scott points it out.
Right. Oh, yeah, right. I won't point out specifically what you said, though, because now they've all forgotten. They've all forgotten.
I do think, though, you know, it's Tuesday. And I know there's people like Rich Straffolino does Daily Tech Headlines, is just now getting the theater. And I get that.
Yeah.
But at some point, we're allowed to speak publicly about a thing in at least generally non-spoilery terms, right? There's the spoil blackout of last week where you're like, don't say anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're starting to get to a week out. Now it could be like, come on, you could make a reference to a thing. You could talk about a person. Like, you don't have to spoil the ending, all the big beats and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know what the limit is.
I mean, at what point do we have to protect a diminishing number of people? I don't know. Today is not that day. I'm not going to spoil anything.
If you believe Breaking Bad creator Vince Gilligan, it's 2 weeks. That's what he says. So,
until Zor-El just wrote, have yourself a super sparkly day, which is what Rich Straffolito says at the end of every Daily Tech Headlines he does. He will be very pleased that you have passed along his, he likes that a lot.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well,
very cool.
Yeah, nice.
You've made Rich's day.
Well done. Well, let's make the day of a few people who helped us with stories today. Who on our subreddit gave us some help today?
Jeff Rose, Strike It Rich One, Matok, and Ripley Ludacris all contributed links that were used in today's preparation for the topics we talked about. You can join them by submitting links or voting on the links that others submit. currentgeek.reddit.com.
Do so. Also, head on over to patreon.com/currentgeek. Why? The answer is simple. It's the way you can support Tom and I for this show. You like the show, you value what we do when we bring on the best movies created of all time that we talk about. Maybe you like the autopilot editions. Maybe you like what we're doing today. Maybe you like this discussion stuff. Whatever it is, hop on over, show your love and support at patreon.com/currentgeek and join others who have done the same. That is patreon.com/currentgeek. All right.
The future promises even more startling things.
Oh, I gotta change. I have to change our thing. Sorry. Here, we gotta put a thing in there so it reminds me. Sorry. Hey, wait, hold on. I'm playing this now. Ah, here we go. Rolling, 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 rolling. It's our keep it rolling segment. Or keep on rolling segment. Where Tom reads Scott a passage from French literary critic Roland Barthes. I never say his last name right.
You're gonna Barth.
Barthes. Seminal work.
You just ignore the S.
Oh,
Roland Barthes.
Because this is because it's possessive. Anyway, it's his seminal work, Mythologies. Tom, take it away.
French toys. One could not find a better illustration of the fact that the adult Frenchman sees the child as another self. All the toys one commonly sees are essentially a microcosm of the adult world. They are all reduced copies of human objects, as if, in the eyes of the public, the child was, all told, nothing but a smaller man, a homunculus, to whom must be supplied objects of his own size.
Wow. Let that sink in, everybody. Think about that one. Put that into your daily work. Actually, do you want to define what that means? Because I have no idea what he's talking about.
Well, I think in that paragraph, what he's trying to say is it's a whole beginning of a whole essay on toys.
Yeah.
He's trying to say that we make toys not for children, but for us.
Oh.
And because they are meant for children, we then just take the world around us and shrink it down to size. And his whole essay then goes on from that to say we are essentially acculturating children to their future roles as adults by giving them babies that wet their beds and, and you know, fire engines, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure, sure. I hate when they wet their fire engines. It's the worst.
Yes.
It's really bad.
I hate it when the babies wet their fire engines.
Nothing worse than that.
And, well, I guess you could do a reclamation thing, and then that would fill the water tank for the fire engine.
Right. Good point. Hadn't thought of that. All right. Yeah. Well, there you go. There is our keep on rolling segment, which we will continue until we are all
I will out. Continue to expose Scott to the post-structuralist philosophy. I don't think it's semiotic. The semiotic philosophy of Roland Barthes. Every week, my friends. Come back next week for more.
I will take your word for it.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
Speaking of startling things to come, it is Forecast. It used to be a show. It's now a segment where we predict the future. And Tom is doing it today. Tom, what new cool thing will I have to look forward to?
So I was thinking about, okay, what, you know, we could talk about food. We could talk about technology. And I hit upon the transporter as one of the things that we expect maybe someday would become real. We talk about quantum entanglement and all of that. And I realized, you know what will happen first? Transporters will happen, but for small items, because it'll take a lot of energy to move them. And you won't want to send living things because that's much more complex to reassemble. You get a couple of atoms out of place here and there in a wooden block, it doesn't matter. So, want to mail a sticker? Send a birthday card? Long before we figure out how to teleport the complex human brain and body, we'll be able to transport small, solid objects so that if I want to send Scott a DTNS sticker, I'll have a little box. I just stick it in. I type in Scott's address. Maybe I even just say, send this to Scott. And then, boop, there it goes. Off to Scott Johnson.
Totally in on this. I think you're totally right, first of all, about how it'll start. Just like with, I think the movies even have this right whenever they experiment with teleportation. And sometimes to their, you know, some things go bad, like a fly gets in with somebody and turns into the fly or whatever, but they always have to start with something small and then you work your way up. So small, non-complex objects. How big can I go though? Do you think like shoe box size, smaller than that?
I'm
going to
say at the beginning, fist size.
Fist
and that's
size.
Then we'll hit like a big long plateau where it'll take a long, like this technology will be invented. It'll become democratized. Everybody will have access to it like they have access to printers right now. And then it'll be a long time before it gets bigger.
Okay. But if it's fist size, that means, let's say I owe...
maybe two fists.
Yeah. All right, two fists. But I just picture a slot that's that size, and you open the little door, and you shove in whatever. I'm trying to think of what I'd shove in there. So here, I have this little case of X-Acto blades. And Tom's like, man, I could use some. Yeah, so I'm going to put those in there, and out it comes on your end. And even if a single atom of the plastic is in one wrong place, it's really not going to matter.
And I think no liquids.
Right. No liquids.
Like the ability to send a solid. You can't mix states of matter. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
And because liquids are always in a container, that would be mixing states. So there'll be a calibration that's like, well, if we know it's solid, that's easier to reconstruct.
Do you think if we didn't things that, well, this is just me showing I don't know how the science works, but if I sent a bottle full of liquid, let's just say a small eyedropper full of water, would it end up in, I mean, we could end up in just like a total chaos state when you get
I it. Think it's like a risky thing, right? Where it might show up okay, or it might just like splash all over the place as soon as it got to the other end.
Okay, I'm into it. Once again, Tom is, why does this feel like it's not that far away? It probably is hugely far away. But
well, because of that desktop, like, ooh, but I have a desktop printer and I have a desktop thing that recognizes speech that I say, like, why wouldn't I have a desktop? There's 3D printers. This is, you know, sort of like out on the other end. The reason it's far away is that we don't know how to actually send matter. And quantum entanglement is not the sending of matter, right? Mm-hmm. Even though we talk about teleporting photons and stuff, we're not literally teleporting them. We're destroying them on one end and recreating them on the other, which I don't know, maybe that's why this will be small blocks of things, because you aren't actually sending the sticker, you're just recreating it.
Yeah, and I guess the reason it feels all possible now is because I can literally send you an electronic signal in immediate time, and that thing could poop out a 3D replica of the thing I've sent you.
I mean, that I think comes much faster than what I'm talking about here. Yeah, yeah. The ability to say, oh, I want to send Scott a sticker, so I will send an algorithm of a sticker, and on his end, his 3D printer will print out the sticker that I wanted to send him. I think that actually comes much sooner.
And if it grows, see, here's the problem, though. If there's growth there, it's not really a problem. It's a problem for economies, because if that grows really fast and does really well and we get really good at duplication, then you're not getting my X-Acto blades, you're getting a copy of my X-Acto blades, and then you could send a copy to somebody else to be exact duplicates, and then you start getting into
I could send multiples, right?
Right. You get into a freaky,
I don't even have to have any X-Acto blades, I just have to have the pattern,
right? So if you got good at sending food, we may
that's
solve
organic,
our
though. I think feel like that gets harder.
That's true. It'd have to be.
But
really,
I guess if we're not talking about actually sending the object, then sending the pattern for food might work, because we have 3D food printers right now.
Right. I guess that still takes material on the other end as well. I don't know. That kind of stuff's
really
fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, all of these scenarios that aren't actually sending the matter would require material on the other end.
Right. The big spools of spaghetti, basically.
Well, have you seen those chocolate printers?
I have. They're amazing. Yeah. It's really cool. I mean, it's totally in theory. Everything you've said is totally possible. You know, like, am I going to get the perfect steak over some sort of replicated printer process right away?
I mean,
probably
that
not.
Is the thing, though, right? Like, sending someone a piece of chocolate to their chocolate printer is like buying them a phone they have to pay for, right? Because they had to supply the chocolate on their end. You didn't do them a favor.
It's not really a gift at that point, is it?
Yeah.
All right. Well, good point. And well said. There you go. That's our future. Get used to it. It's the best thing of all time this week. And for me, it was the drive from Vegas to Salt Lake, or vice versa. Both ways is a beautiful thing to do this time of year. I just cannot say enough about that particular drive. Now, a lot of people are like, wait, isn't that in the middle of the desert and it's all boring? Not at all. It gets a little boring after you hit the Nevada border and you are making your way to Vegas. But everything from Salt Lake down to just past St. George is unbelievably beautiful. Giant
it
skies.
From the pictures you posted, like you were driving through an old Windows wallpaper.
Yeah, it totally does. The clouds are insane. The skies are so big. The mountains are crazy. You get to the Red Rock zone of stuff, and it's just breathtaking to drive through that space. So I highly recommend it. Whether you're going one way or the other, that is a beautiful, beautiful drive. I'm so sorry, Kansas and everywhere else where you have long, boring drives. We have the best drives. I'm just going to say.
You mean Southern Illinois.
Yeah, or Southern Illinois. Tom, what was your best thing of all time this week?
Well, speaking of Las Vegas, because we went there for the TMS meetup, which was fantastic. Thanks to everybody who said hello. It was nice seeing everybody. Mm-hmm. We ended up on Saturday night at a speakeasy that is conducted in the basement of the Mob Museum in downtown Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you, when people said we're going to a speakeasy, I thought, oh, well, this will be fine. let's go see what it's like, because I've been to speakeasies in San Francisco before.
Sure.
And they always are kind of snooty. Mm-hmm. And the one that I used to go to in San Francisco would require you to have a reservation for 2 hours only, and then you'd have to leave. Like, you couldn't just come whenever you wanted and hang out.
Lame.
And it was, you know, it was a little pompous. This one was such the opposite. The moment we get there, everybody's super nice to us, helping us find seats, attentive service at the bar. There's all these mob museum exhibits in the bar. There's a woman dressed as a flapper up there singing songs. We just sat and had a great time. There were non-alcoholic drinks. There were alcoholic drinks. Some of the drinks were served in books that you had to open up, like you were literally like hiding your booze in a book. Mm-hmm. It was fantastic.
Yeah, I am 100% behind you, and that is a place I would hang out all the time. So the way it works is they do have a little slat. They open it up and ask for a password. The password's up on their Instagram page every day, and it's a different code all the time. So you always want to know the code. So as long as one of you knows it, you get in. And even if you don't, they joke around with you, but you get in. They don't turn people away. But it is very authentic. Outside of, you know, their billing administration system that they use to, you know, pay out people's tabs and stuff, or like on iPads and touch screens. But other than that, it's actually got a very old school vibe. The lights look like they might have candles in them or really old bulbs. It's kind of new. I think they just finished it not long ago, according to Mitsula, and it's really, really cool. I liked it a lot, and I spent a long time in that place that night. Like, well,
they
after
have some
you
food,
left, even.
You know, little pretzel bites and hot dogs. And
yeah, and the drinks were cool.
I mean, pretzel bites and hot dogs doesn't sound that good, but they're really good.
Yeah. And I'm not a drinker, but I was amazed by, like, the book one you mentioned literally comes in a book that's been hollowed out. You open it up, you pull the bottle out. It's this old school looking flask. You pour into your glass with the ice in it. There was another one that comes in a medicine bottle that looks like a prescription from 1920.
Like a prescription,
but it's got the booze in it, and then you use that to put in your thing. Like, they were just very adherent to the theme, and it just...
They had three or four non-alcoholic ones, too, I noticed on the menu.
They did. I had one of them. It was... forgot the name, but it was fantastic. They were great, and I would have had more had I thought to.
So you were driving.
I was driving. Yeah. I had to drive my way through Fremont Street. Nobody wants to be drinking and doing that.
But, yeah, I also walked out on the check.
Oh, that's right. Tom accidentally left without paying his bill.
So we were all sitting at a table. I'll try to explain this in a brief as amount as possible. We're all sitting at the table. I only had two drinks. Yeah. I would like to say I was so drunk. I wasn't even drunk.
Yeah.
And when they came up and I ordered, they said, is it with everybody else? I was like, oh no, keep mine separate.
Yeah.
And then I'm sitting there thinking when I leave, I need to leave this much cash for my portion of the bill, as I had started to forget that I had told them it was separate, and they didn't bring me any separate bill or anything like that.
Right.
Anyway, so then when we got up to leave, I was so distracted by saying goodbye to everybody and so sad that it was over and I was leaving and making sure that I gave everybody a hug.
Yeah.
We just walked out. Yep. And then Justin and Scott are like, dude, you walked on your check. And huge thanks to Mitsula, who covered me. I owe him more than just the amount. It wasn't that much. Relatively speaking, I didn't run up like $100 bar bill or anything like that, but it was very nice that he covered me and my shame. So thank you, Mitsula.
Yep. It was funny because we were all just like, this is the least Tom thing we'd ever witnessed. And we knew, you know, I 100% knew it was just a goof, but it was kind of funny. We all had a good laugh, and Chris was happy to pay the bill.
Yeah, it was very nice of him to do that.
But it was really fun. You guys should check it out. Next time you're there, do two things. Go to the mob,
pay your bill.
Go to the mob museum in general. That's a really cool thing. And then hang out in that speakeasy in the basement. It's rad and clean.
TheMobMuseum.org.
Exactly. And it's clean and nice and new. Like, it's not like some dumpy bar. Nice. It was like a really nice, perfectly lit. It was just great. All right. That's going to do it for the show, everybody. Real quick, though, Legal Geek swings in, as he always does, most weeks anyway. This week, talking about store shelves watching you, or a view of the new retailer technology that will not just track your demographics, but additionally things like mood of consumers and target them with advertisements. Creepy! Or is it? Well, we'll find out when you listen to Legal Geek right after this. So stick around for that. Before we go, I'm going to a museum tonight, so that'll be fun. That's why we're not doing an email today, everybody. But if you want to send us your emails, you can. That's currentgeek@gmail.com. You can also send us your voicemails, 801-471-0462. Before we go, Tom Merritt, anything happening in your world we should talk about?
Yes, indeed. FreeTomNewsletter.com is a way to keep up with all the stuff that I do each week. I'll list all the daily tech news shows. I'll list Current Geek in there, obviously. But also, it'll expose you to some shows maybe you didn't know I do, or if I do guest appearances on other people's shows, or I do special appearances, or there's new series that come out. It's all in there. If you want to keep up with all the cool stuff that I do, go to freetomnewsletter.com.
I agree. That's a great idea. We're back, so that means all the shows, all the stuff, everything is happening. If you are interested in any of it, go to frogpants.com, currentgeek.com for this show. And we would love it if you did, because there's cool stuff there as well. We'll be back next week with a whole new episode. I don't know what we're doing. It'd be an autopilot, right?
Next week is movies.
Oh, movie. What's our thing?
It's Maltese Falcon.
Oh, right. I remember now. Maltese Falcon. Keep it in your glove box, is my understanding. I don't know what that means. All right. So we'll be back for that in one Earth week. Thank you all for joining us. We'll see you then.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week we discuss a new technology for retailers that invokes serious privacy concerns that you should know about. Going back to as early as 2013, the National Retail Federation's annual trade show has featured companies developing consumer monitoring technologies to try and make brick-and-mortar retailers remain competitive with online commerce. These technologies are based around cameras that image a consumer in a store and then offer targeted advertisements and offers based on the demographics observed of the consumer. This branch of store technology hit another level a few weeks ago in the 2019 show, as at least one company debuted smart shelves that use cameras to detect not just the age and gender of a nearby consumer, but also a mood of that consumer. This information can be used to gauge consumer reaction to a product on the shelf or an advertisement panel on the shelf, with the end goal being delivery of tailored advertisements at the point of sale that are most effective to leading to purchases. If this sounds like your experience online, it is because that's precisely what these companies are modeling their technology from, just in an in-person context. Indeed, some major retailers are already testing smart cameras or lenses on store shelves. Walgreens has a handful of big city locations where the beverage coolers have display screens rather than glass across the front, and cameras mounted on board to detect where a consumer is directing his or her attention. The grocery store chain Kroger has installed test camera units on store shelves in Seattle and Cincinnati suburbs to detect age and gender of shoppers. So in the future, you may not only be pictured by security cameras in stores protecting against thieves, but also by targeted advertising devices trying to entice you to buy certain products based on your demographics or mood. If that sounds a bit creepy to you, just know that most privacy law experts agree. But the retail industry is struggling to keep up with online sellers who have the advantages of tailored ads and the internet. So don't be surprised if such technologies become commonplace in major retailers in the next few years. It will be critical for retailers and shops to be open and honest about these systems as they are adopted, so that consumers with privacy concerns can make an informed choice about whether they subject themselves to the new monitoring technologies. One might say it's a brave new world in retail, but we don't want to go too 1984 on you. The bottom line is, just like when mega chains like Walmart challenged the existence of many local mom-and-pop shops in the last couple decades, the in-person retail space is once again challenged to adapt or be left behind by online commerce. We will see how far retailers and tech companies can go before privacy advocates and the government step in to limit invasions of consumers' privacy. It shapes up to make a potential interesting legal battlefield for the future. Now, excuse me while I go figure out how to invent an in-person ad blocker to contest these targeted advertising schemes. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.